It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depth of the most terrifying imaginations about painful patricide. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Sarah Jane Huntington are voice talents Danielle Hewitt and Nick Goroff. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our Theater of the Minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Sarah Jane Huntington and performed by Danielle Hewitt and Nick Goroff. In it, we meet a woman motivated by one of the most powerful forces of hatred that there is: revenge. Now, without further ado, I present to you Father Dearest.
Perspective. I like that word. Sometimes I roll the letters around my tongue so I can enjoy the feel of it. Perspective can sum up 100 different views, all of the very same events. The deep and dark horror movie-style pit on the edge of our land, for example. A disused relic and dangerous hole to some. The home of slithering monsters to my younger siblings. For me, it's the resting place of my father. Although, he isn't actually resting. He went tumbling down the pit, bouncing off the edges and screaming his wretched sounds of fury and despair. All the way down into that bottomless hole. Until finally, I heard the faint thud as he landed, followed by the wonderful sound of blissful silence. I was the only witness to his accident, which was very lucky indeed. You see, I'm the one that pushed him. I often think that people are capable of impossible things. You hear the stories of a frantic parent suddenly able to lift a whole car after an accident to fearlessly rescue a small trapped child. Amazing feats of strength, powered by pure love, under the right set of adrenaline-fueled circumstances. I think it's possible that the same power might work in reverse. A good person can become suddenly capable of what others might call a horrific and sudden act of evil. For as far back as I can remember, I always hated my father. While other fathers would delight at their child's first steps, mine would wait for the inevitable crash to the floor, so he could sit around laughing, beer and Bible in hand. A meanness lived inside of him. Desperate cruelty grew. And in him, it flourished. There was no love in his misshapen heart of hatred that I ever witnessed. My father liked to blame his own children for the state of his life, for his home, and for the state of his own terrible self. A vile man by all accounts. I was born first, the eldest by a year. I was named Ruth. My mother died during childbirth. She bled to death, giving birth to Nellie, my youngest sister. Mother gave birth to six of us total. Two died as soon as they were born, but not one single tear was ever shed by our father. Life was tough after she passed. After Mother's death, the four of us surviving children left, were raised in filth. He hated us. Father despised everyone. Mother was the rock that bound us together. She could control Father, just enough. She kept his anger at bay, made him keep his fists and harsh leather belt to himself. Without her, our lives fell apart. Grime soon covered every visible surface. Carpets became torn and dirty. Furniture sat broken. The old sofa had a hole big enough to swallow you up into its spring and foam-filled abyss. The windows were cracked and held together by thick black electrical tape, and two panes were missing entirely. Cupboard doors swung loose, or were long gone. As soon as I was deemed old enough, cleaning became my job, an impossible task. Father would sit in the only good chair we had, reading his Bible over and over. He would pause to shout out particular quotations and bark out orders while he ate bag after bag of sweets, drank beer after beer. When he wasn't eating, you could hear him mumbling, scratching, and picking at his own skin. Pick, scratch, pick, mumble, mumble. He started off picking at his nails until all that remained were bloody stubs. Then he started on his fingertips, until he advanced to his whole hands and arms. Chunks would be missing like tiny bite marks. Little pieces of skin fell to the floor like confetti. Sometimes he bandaged the worst bits, but mostly he carried on. Pick, scratch, pick, mumble, until his hands resembled a severe burn victim. That still didn't stop him. He was troubled and mean before Mother died. Her death caused his anger to simmer to a boil and erupt. Sometimes he climbed into our old car to visit the shops, coming back loaded with brown paper bags full of sweets and beer for himself. None for any of us. We had a kind of stepmother for a few months, a pleasant lady who met Father in church. He could put on a charming act when it suited him. He played the part of a sad, lonely widower well. She ran for the hills as soon as Father got drunk and lost his temper late one night. She left so fast she forgot her handbag and her car. I doubted it was the hills she ended up in.
And he shall rule over thee! Genesis 3:16!
He bellowed at her the night she vanished for those mythical hills. Father did love his Bible passages. He had one for every situation. The poor woman hadn't been a permanent fixture anyway. We all knew she wouldn't stay or be told what to do. I liked her. After that, Father got drunk every night. He took to being surprised when we were around. He said things like,
"Why aren't you damn feral kids in school?"
Or,
"I thought there were only three of you."
My little brother Tom became his favorite. And by that I mean he got fewer beatings than the rest of us. And he always had an extra serving of food, whenever we actually had any. Tom was good at quoting the Bible. He paid attention, and he learned fast. Father would ask me to repeat his favorite passages. I never would.
"You don't listen,"
he raged.
"You have the devil in you. You spiteful, evil child!"
He liked to remove his belt and beat the demons out of me. He said I was full of sin and corruption.
"In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, Genesis 1, one.
When he started with that sentence, we had to listen for hours and hours. My sisters were too young to really understand. And me? I believed that if God existed, he would have killed my father himself. We had no other relatives that we knew of. No one ever came out to visit. We were a forgotten, isolated family on the very edge of an overlooked and failed half-derelict town. The land was bad. All barren. Nothing would grow. Even weeds refused to flourish. Except for the hardiest stinging type or the poisonous nasty kind. When I had just turned 14, I took to sitting on the splintered window seat in the room I shared with my sisters. I liked to gaze at the stars and think, but worry always got the better of me. I worried that if I ran away, my siblings would suffer more in my absence. I worried that if I stayed, I might never be able to escape. I knew there was a world out beyond my reach. A whole beautiful world to see and experience. I yearned to be part of it. I knew it couldn't all be misery, cleaning, hunger, and Bible lessons. Pick, scratch, pick, came the sound from downstairs. Mumble, mumble, as Father drunkenly moved around. As my sister slept, I started forming the beginnings of a plan deep in the depths of my mind. The thing that really triggered my desire for his death was the way he'd looked at my sister. My 8-year-old sister. I had to act. The next day I woke up early to pointlessly clean the windows. I had a perfect view of our barren garden. The old pit. It sat at the end of our property and had long ago been covered with meek metal sheeting. No one knew who built it, and no one seemed to know why it was created in the first place. I recall asking my mother once. She only shrugged and told me it had always just been there. It was a hole in the ground, 3 meters wide and pitch black inside. We were forbidden to go near it. I snuck outside, lifted the metal sheet, and I heard sounds from inside the pit. A kind of tired gurgling, almost like the noises our stomachs make. I assumed it must be old water, still trickling from the nearby overgrown pond. It smelled of rot and decay, sulfur and moss. I knew Father sometimes dropped beer bottles down. I suspected the nice lady from church might be down there too. I dropped a small rock and waited. I counted the seconds until it hit the bottom. 8 glorious seconds. I guess it was deep enough for someone to go plummeting to their death. At the very least, a person would be trapped inside and die eventually. Getting Father outside would be the hard part. I tried and failed for 4 days. Father wasn't the type to fall for trickery. He only chose to move if there was something in it for him. A year before, I fell down the stairs, armful of laundry I had to finish within an hour. I busted my ankle pretty bad, and I screamed. But rather than help me, I got a slap around the head for disturbing his reading. "No," I yelled. "Get off me." Instinctively, I pushed him away from me.
"Whoever curses his father or mother shall be put to death." Exodus 21:17.
He tipped the dirty washing over me, kicked me, and dropped the basket on my head for good measure. I had to get him outside. I felt as if I had nothing to lose. Truly. I walked into the living room and told him Tom had fallen down the pit. My voice shook with fear, but that only added to my believability. "We were playing. He slipped, and I can't pull him up," I said. "I'm not strong enough like you. I can see him, clinging to the edge. Tom's falling, Father." I saw a range of emotions play across his face. before he predictably settled his expression on anger. He came barreling at me, quicker than I expected for such a large man. A shower of sweet wrappers and flakes of skin fell to the filthy carpet.
I'll kill you, devil girl. Just you wait. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Exodus 22:18.
He hit me hard. Hard enough so that my ears buzzed. And I fell against the wall. He stormed out, thundering across the front lawn, while I battled to get my senses back in time. I had a kind of tunnel vision at the moment. Perfect clarity and focus. All I could see was his massive behind as he peeked down into the pit.
Tom, you down there?
He was just working himself up for a second yell as I swung and hit him in the back of the head with our chicken shit-covered spade.
You!
He spun and gasped, wobbled. Blood poured down the side of his head as his cold eyes turned full of the purest hate. I became filled with the certainty that it was either me or him in those precious seconds. So, I pushed him. I gave him one big old mighty shove, and off he went. Down, down, down. Bouncing off the sides and screaming all the way. I heard the thud as he landed, the snap of some essential bone. I threw the spade in along with old straw newspapers, old rags and soil too, until I felt confident he was covered up, if anyone happened to stop by and peer down. I replaced the metal sheet and held it down with more bricks. I walked steadily back to the house as if nothing had happened. I cleaned myself up and gathered his precious sweets into a pile. I shared it equally between the three children, as I explained that Father had grown tired of us and left. He's run to the hills, I told them. Children are more resilient than you might think. There were a few tears of confusion, but the treats did a good job and dulled the upset just fine. Things will be different now, I told their beautiful dirty faces. Very different. The next couple of days were challenging. My siblings were overwhelmed by their new sense of freedom. They were no longer confined to their rooms, but running free like children do and should. I made a fire outside and hoped no one from town would bother to come looking for its source. I burnt old furniture, rugs, and Father's clothes. I bathed my sisters and watched the dirty water drain away, hoping our misery would go along with it, swirling away and off down the drain. Tom took his own bath in privacy, bribed into the water with promises of more sweets. On the third day, I cooked, cleaned, and took stock. I found a large pile of money hidden in a dresser that made me very happy. In the evening, I was sitting in the one good chair so that I could think and make clear plans when I first heard it. Pick, scratch, pick. Mumble, mumble. My veins turned to ice as I waited. The sound felt as if it came from the house itself, from inside the walls and under the ground. Pick, scratch, pick. Scratch, pick. I paused to wonder if the noise came from my own guilt-ridden mind. I shook my head rapidly as if to send the thoughts away. I paced the room and held my ground, raised by a father we all had made me fear almost nothing. The more I heard the sound, the more I became full to the brim with anger until it toppled over. You will not ruin our lives anymore, I seethed out loud. The sound stopped abruptly, but I was spooked all the same. I took hold of one of our flashlights, and I went out to place extra bricks on top of the metal sheeting which had slipped off. I sat and stared into the pit. I wondered until morning came. The next day presented problems. We needed food. I couldn't legally drive the old car, but that didn't worry me. I didn't want to leave my siblings, and I couldn't take them all with me. Forced into a corner, I told Tom he had to be the adult, be the man of the house while I was out. He puffed up his chest and took the role just fine. So I made the drive into town, feeling pleased. I looked older than my years. I expected to be questioned, and I practiced my answers on the way. But no one bothered me. I filled the cart with good and decent food. The shop clerk raised a penciled eyebrow at me when I tried to smile sweetly, but nothing more. I got home and sat a moment, gathering my breath before I put everything away in its proper place. Pick, scratch, pick, mumble, pick, pick. I ran into the living room furious. I found absolutely no one. On the floor by his chair, on the ground I cleaned and scrubbed repeatedly, sat pieces of freshly picked skin. That night, I put my siblings to bed, freshly washed and with brushed hair and teeth. I sat in the living room and I waited. I almost fell asleep. And then I heard it. A slow shuffle coming toward the house. My house. I stood quickly and headed to the curtains to peer out. They say love never dies. But maybe hate doesn't either. I watched as my father stumbled across the dead brown grass, almost naked, but with bits of his trousers hanging off him in strips. His huge stomach jerked and wobbled as he lurched. Black and green slime covered him nearly head to toe, as bits dripped off and trailed behind him. His mouth hung wide open. His eyes were nothing but white staring orbs. His left leg bent backward, stuck at an odd angle, and he dragged it uselessly, using the spade as support. His face stayed locked in a grimace of rage and despair. He was dead set on our front door. He was coming for me. I knew it. I hadn't killed him properly, and now he wanted revenge. Wild panic ignited inside me. Pick, scratch, pick, came the sound as I clamped my hands over my ears. My heartbeat drummed relentlessly in my ears. The shuffling came closer and I darted to the kitchen for the biggest knife I could find, fully prepared to kill him again. Mine, now, I raged. This house is mine. The children are mine. I yanked open the door and ran into the empty night to find nothing. No one was there at all. It's all in my mind. Guilt? My imagination? I told myself. Do I expect God to punish me because I killed him when he should have? I hadn't felt a single ounce of guilt when I pushed him. Only freedom. But I suspected that maybe I felt it somewhere inside me anyway. And I just didn't know it yet. The next day, I started to teach my sisters how to read. We joked and laughed. We drank fresh fruit juices and ate warm baked cookies. Tom discovered a tin of paint in the old shed out back, and he hummed away, happily painting the hallway. He did a very good job, too, and I hugged him proudly. For the very first time, he didn't flinch. In the evening, I lugged the television upstairs. We ate popcorn and cuddled up under a blanket while we watched The Wizard of Oz. It was my mother's favorite, and we hadn't been allowed to watch it because Father said, "The devil made it." We all enjoyed it. I knew we had more courage and heart than any of the characters. All of us fell asleep in a tangle like newly born little kittens. I woke to the sound of shuffling outside and the familiar noise. Pick, scratch, pick, mumble, mumble. I held on tight to my family and tried to only think of good thoughts. The sound wouldn't quit. I stayed quiet until it hurt my mind. The scratching started up on the front door. I crept down. Pick, scratch, pick. I didn't open the door. I leaned against it and I prayed. I pleaded with God to help me.
Vengeance. He will bathe his feet in the blood of the wicked. Psalm 58:10.
I heard my father hiss. Go to hell, I answered. An eye for a fucking eye. Exodus 21:24, bitch. I dragged a heavy chair across and barricaded the door. I sat on the bottom step and waited until morning. The next day, I concentrated on my siblings. We planted seedlings in freshly dug ground. In the evening, I bathed my sisters and put them in bed. Both of them hugged me hard. I sat on the stairs with the biggest knife we had, and I waited. The shuffling started at around midnight. My father stood at the closed front door. I listened for breathing, but he didn't take a single breath that I could hear. This is my house now, I told him through the door, and I swear I heard him growl in return. Pick, pick, pick. Scratch, scratch, scratch. I'm not scared of you, I whispered. I repeated it over and over until I believed it myself. We stayed in a stalemate on each side of the door.
An eye for an eye,
he said, just before the sun came up. I heard him shuffle away as dawn arrived. When I finally opened the front door, there were no tracks, but a small pile of freshly picked skin lay settled on the doorstep. I knew I faced a choice. I could either give in to the fear, my own hidden guilt and paranoia, or I could try to undo the damage he'd done to all of us, me included. Hate is a heavy burden to carry. It leaks into the deepest parts of you until it eats you away with its bitter poison, until there's nothing left. My mother always said something was wrong with the land we lived on. She said nothing could grow or thrive. But thinking of all the hate Father had inside, I knew something could grow. It all depended on your perspective. While my brother and sisters tucked into a fried breakfast, I poured old petrol down the pit. I set fire to a cleaning rag and threw it down with a flourish. The bang I hadn't expected shook the house, and it knocked me clean off my feet. I landed on the grass with a thump, scooting backward, then spinning and racing up. My family stood at the door with open mouths and wide, fearful eyes. I couldn't help myself. I started laughing, a deep, manic, snorting laugh. Soon it was all of us doubled over giggling. Ruth, my tummy hurts, Tom said. He wasn't used to laughing. He stood with a precious strip of bacon clutched in his hand, happy tears streaming down his face. And that started us laughing all over again.
What went bang?
My sister asked. Father did, I told her. Father went boom. Years have passed now, and since that day, Father hasn't come back much. I don't know if it was the fire that almost finished him off, or if he really did die the first time around. But I do know one fact. Things can grow on this land after all. Things can grow plenty, and they can thrive. Father was evil, cruel, twisted up inside, and the land reacted. Or maybe it was the other way around. My siblings and I took the vicious hate, and we overcame it. We pulled up every bad weed and destroyed every mean thing on our land. Every time something nasty grew back, we pulled it out again until it gave up its fight entirely. We grew pretty flowers and good food. We talked about Mother and never mentioned him. We banished all the hate, and we replaced it with love every chance we got. And so love started to grow and thrive. Pure love. Sometimes when I wake up in the night, I can hear him. Pick, pick, scratch, pick, mumble, mumble. On occasion, I find dead, rotting bits of pickled flesh on our doorstep. But that hasn't happened for a long time now. I think his power has faded some. I plan on filling the pit in soon and pouring concrete down the whole drop, just in case. I don't view myself as a murderer. I killed one to save four. I defeated evil and I have no regrets. After his death, we were happy. We were loved by each other. We were safe, healthy, and well. We were free, and bad memories faded from the land and from inside us. And Father was wrong. I did listen. But there was only ever one Bible passage I liked. Hatred stirs up strife. Love covers all offenses. Proverbs 10:12.
I hope you enjoyed Father Dearest, as written by Sarah Jane Huntington and performed by Daniel Hewitt and Nick Goroff. Tonight's tale were from Sarah Jane Huntington's book, Iron Maidens, and is brought to us by our friends over at Velox. Please visit www.veloxbooks.com to find more from this author and others. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyre has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And please follow us on Facebook, X, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.